The Saskatchewan Healthcare Coalition is hosting the All for Public Healthcare Rally in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, May 4th. It's free and you're invited. This rally is happening because our public healthcare system does not have the support it needs to meet the diverse needs of all Saskatchewan residents. For years, it has been underfunded, ignored, and hindered, so join Donna and I in person on May 4th in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan for a walk, speeches, networking, and community building. Link for more information is in the show notes. Hope to see you there. Music can save lives, both in people who make it and those who listen. That's the case with Skylar Ray, a musician from Portland, Oregon. From broken family to foster care to life on the street, Skylar had aspirations of making music from as young as 9 years old, but life got in the way. Today, with a growing music career and 5 years in recovery, Skylar joined Donna and I on the podcast to talk about his journey and what he learned along the way. But before we get into it, what's up? My name's Dan, podcaster, keynote speaker, and advocate, and this is Hard Knocks Talks, your addictions podcast. If you're interested in fostering productive conversations about substance use in your community, organization, or event, reach out to us at daniel@hardknockstalks.com to learn more about our public speaking and live onstage podcast productions. And with that, let's get into our conversation with Skylar Ray.
This is Hard Knocks Talks.
What's up, Skylar? How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm really digging your microphone. You sound amazing. Mm-hmm. I love it. I appreciate you very much for taking the time to set that up and for us and everything like that. So you reached out to us. I think you reached out to us a little while ago, wasn't that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we kicked off right away, and I'm happy to have you here. Before we jump in, though, is there anything that you'd like to start off with? Anything you'd like to say?
For anybody who's listening, my name is Skylar Ray. I'm a music artist in long-term recovery. A little over 5 years clean and sober. And if you guys know anything about me, I use my platform and my music is based off of real life experiences, which I'm sure you guys will hear about that in this episode. And I'm grateful to be here. Thank you so much for responding to the comments and allowing me on your platform.
Of course, of course. So why don't we jump in then? Why don't we start like a little bit with how it all got started for you? Like, did you grow up around a lot of drug use, or was that something that came in on its own?
You know, well, at a young age, there was always like marijuana, alcohol kind of in the house, right? Mm-hmm. And so kind of, you know, it was always just around and I kind of knew of it. And then I found myself kind of in foster homes at like 9. But I was smoking with my dad. I had an older brother. So anything, my older brother was 4 years older than me. So as the time he got into the age where he kind of plays with the drugs and things like that, it kind of came with me. And I kind of did it as well, just because he took me everywhere with him, if that makes sense. So if his age group was drinking and smoking, I caught on a little bit early, you know. And so it kind of became that way. I wouldn't say it was always in the household as far as like hard drugs, but one thing leads to another, as you know, right? You start smoking weed, you start drinking. Next thing you know, you're shooting dope and you're homeless under a bridge.
Whoa,
it doesn't that escalated happen that quickly. Quick, but no, it doesn't happen that quick, but you know.
Yeah, so, yeah. So hang on now.
When it's a journey. Go ahead.
When you were hanging out with your brother, and you were, you know, did you feel privileged? Did you feel like you were getting to do things that other kids your age were doing? Like, were you bragging about it?
I wouldn't say if I was bragging, because I knew I was doing stuff I wasn't supposed to. But I hung out with my friends at school. Then afterwards, I went and hung out with his friends, if that makes sense. You know, we had a best friend. And I say we had a best friend because every day we hung out with this kid. His name was Aniva. We used to always run around. Like, that was kind of the thing. Like, we would drink or smoke or, you know, ring doorbells or throw eggs, like steal from the stores. That was kind of like the thing as kids to kind of do. You're like 8, 9, 10, you know, but like as like the alcohol and the drug use came around, I wouldn't say I really talked to about it with my friends at school, because when school ended, I wasn't around them, if that makes sense. And I kind of just knew to keep it hush hush. I wasn't trying to get nobody in trouble.
Yeah.
You know,
cool, man. So did you graduate?
You know, I did graduate. I dropped out for a year when I was maybe 17, and then I went back to school. Maybe I dropped out when I was close to 18, because I went back to school at 19. I'm very proud of that. You know, I found myself in a situation. I tried to go live with this girl. I thought, you know, I was going to be 18. I was going to be an adult. I went with her. I lived there for a little bit. Then after the breakup, I realized that there was no reason why I should be out of school and that I was this close. So I might as well get back into it and finish the job.
So it wasn't at this point in your life, it wasn't you weren't completely lost then. Like if you still had the wherewithal, though, maybe I should go and finish high school. Like you still had aspirations. Like what were your aspirations? Like what did you want to do?
Music.
So it's always been doing music since.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to do music since 9 and I've been doing music since 11.
Wow.
I'll be 34 this year. So it's always that's always been the dream on the front line. Even because up until high school, I mean, at the end, we're talking about getting back in school, right? Mm-hmm. I've tried hard drugs. I've tried like meth a couple times at that point. I've tried, you know, some pills. I've tried like ecstasy, mushrooms. Like there's a lot of stuff I tried, right? But it wasn't an everyday thing. So it was like I was smoking weed every day and drinking every day. But that was as far as it went. So I still had a little bit. I wasn't on the hard stuff, right? Not saying anything's all right, but I wasn't on the hard stuff and I was still somewhat had my mind right. And I just felt like if I had to do anything, like I got to at least hold on for these next 4 or 5 months of school and figure things out. Right. And then I can do whatever I want. So, you know, but mostly I was focused on music. I had no plans of wanting to go to college. I still never been to college. You know, eventually I think I would want to go to college, but it would be later down the line. It would be for business. It would be for marketing, things like that. Just for things to, you know, selflessly use in my career pathway.
So,
you know, but that's later down the road. As right now, I'm pretty content, but I'm always down to learn some more. So.
Yeah. So you finished high school then. Did you have any success in a career?
You know, I did. It was a sales job. So after I was like 18, so I lived with my brother and then afterwards, he fell back into his addiction and I moved back to Portland and that's when I became homeless, right? I had too much pride to ask for help, too much things like that. And there really wasn't much help. And so I kind of went downtown. Someone said there's a shelter downtown. And that's when my real drug addiction started, like the whole, not started, but like the hard drugs where I became homeless and shooting meth and selling it, prison, all that stuff like that. But I did get clean at about 22 years old the first time, right?
Yeah.
And I ended up getting this job. I couldn't find a job. Well, I didn't look. I take that back. I didn't look for a job until I did. And somebody told me, hey, there's a sales job. They hire everybody. And so I was like, okay,
that
cool. So I went in there. It was.
What were you selling?
They didn't want to hire people because of their records, right?
Yeah.
And because they wanted people to have clean records, no felons. And I went in there and he's like, do you have any sales experience? And I was like, yes, flip to the next page. You see the criminal history right there? I said, that's sales experience right there.
It
may not be the one you want, but I said, but it is sales experience. And I said, I'm willing to work hard, you know, may not be the best, but I'm willing to outwork the person next to me. And so I ended up getting this job and I ended up like after like a year, ended up being a manager. Ended up excelling. I'm like 23 years old, 24 years old. On salary, I got my own little personal office. We got the sales floor. I'm managing a bunch of people. Like I found a lot of success in that area just because it allowed me, all I had to do was motivate people, right? All I had to do was talk to people and get people fired up. And a lot of people related to me because I was like the youngest manager there. They saw, hey, if this kid could, you know, come from the streets, you know, doing what he did in his previous history to now in a suit on salary, getting good bonuses. Like, I'm going to listen to this kid, right? And I was a goofball. So it's like, I wasn't like a hard ass. I wasn't like, you know, go work. My goal was to try to figure out what makes people tick. And like, I won a bunch of awards for my job position, right? Because we had offices around the country. And for my actual job position, I actually won the award for like the manager at the time about the type of manager I was. It was really cool. You know, I had a great team. They were productive. So I would say I found a lot of success in that area. So if you guys hear snoring, it is not me breathing, struggling on the mic. It is actually my bulldog sleeping down here.
I didn't get a chance before the show to say what a cutie.
I love her.
I see her on Facebook and stuff, and yeah, she's definitely cute. Yeah, for sure.
She's my dream dog, and we finally got her this year. She's going on tour with us, so it's lots of excitement.
Nice. Take her up on stage, why not?
Hey, it's gonna be fun. We got the tour van, me and my lady, and now my English bulldog. It's been a dream for so long. Like, you guys can't see it, but I actually got a calendar up here, and it's something that I manifested, right? And I stopped it on the December month because I wanted the dog I get to look exactly like the dog on the calendar, and they look identical. Yeah. Right. We flew out to Wisconsin, across the country, got her, drove back. It took us some years because you have to be responsible, right? You can't just dive into stuff and just take stuff. So I'm grateful. Sobriety is awesome. My life is incredible.
So let's look at a comment here.
Thanks for your comment, Rebecca. She says, I was the older sibling that was bringing my two younger siblings with me. Their addiction escalated more quickly to hard drugs than mine did. It took a lot of work to put down that guilt.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be hard.
It's a lot. It's a lot of responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I was, and this is a little bit different, but yeah, the first time Donna tried meth was with a guy that looked a lot like me. So, and we can laugh about it now because we luckily survived it. But at the time, you know, there are still some times, you know, where I think about that and like, man, I wish things would have played out different. So, but anyways, we used to have a camera. Well, sometimes we have a camera that goes on our dog. Like, we've got a big dog laying right by Donna's feet here. He's a, you've seen our dog too on Facebook.
I've seen it before. Yeah.
So sometimes we have a Sioux cam.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Hey, so, they're man's best friend, you know?
So. Yeah. So you're at this point in your story, you're killing it. You're managing a sales floor. You're doing
winning
great.
Awards.
Winning awards on top of the world. 23 years old, like super young.
Yeah.
The world is your oyster.
But it all fell apart.
Yeah. That's where I was going.
It all fell apart. And so what happened is I've never experienced success like that in the real world, right? It got to my head. Also, you know, I had almost a year clean. I was doing everything right for the probation officer. I was doing everything right that I was supposed to do. And, you know, I started drinking. I thought, well, my addiction's with meth. I'm not an alcoholic. I can drink. Well, I started drinking, and turns out I am an alcoholic, right? Funny how that works out. the reason why I say that is because, not because I spent a lot of my money on it, not because I stayed at the bars late, but because of who I am as a person now as a sober man was completely different. My morals, my loyalty, what I stand on, my principles. I had a girl I was dating at the time, and you know, she was really good to me. You know, I'm very grateful I got a good one in my life now, but it's like, I had this one, right? And she was good to me where we got clean and sober together. I started drinking and I realized that I can't drink because I started cheating on her, right? I started cheating on her with the girls in the office. I started, you know, sleeping around, I'm drinking. And that's why I say I found out I'm an alcoholic, not because I spent my money, not because I was at the bar, but because the principles that I stand on as a sober man completely went out the window. And, you know, I wasn't the best partner. And she ended up finding out, as she should. You know, we broke up. I moved out. And what it looked like for me moving out was, you know, Oxford houses. Sorry. I spaced the word. So like Oxford houses, or I was like living with people, things like that. And it's like, once she went out the window, I was like, well, now I can do coke, right? I can do coke. So I'm still running the office, right? I'm still running the office. I'm running around. I'm doing good still in that area of life. I'm sure they could see the decline a little bit. I'm starting to probably come and smell like booze. I'm probably drinking at lunch, you know, but I am the hype man. So it kind of works, you know, and then so like I started doing coke. And one thing I learned about coke, I figured, well, I can do coke because my addiction's with meth. Well, it turns out even if I could do coke, I can't afford it very long because coke is expensive, right? And so within a couple of weeks, I mean, my bank accounts were flushed. I was the guy, right? Because, you know, I dealt with abandonment issues and things like that, right? So I always felt the need to want to show off, to be everybody's friend. It was important to win people's love over, right? And to be accepted. And so I was the type of person who would show up to the party, would have like office parties at people's houses, things like that. But I had to provide the coke for everybody, would have like 20 people in there and I'm giving lines to everybody. Oh, we're out. Go send somebody to go get some more. Like, that's this person I was. And I only could afford that for like a week and a half, 2 weeks, no matter what salary I was on, no matter, you know, it went quick. And then I thought to myself, well, I can't afford Coke, but I'm really loving this high, right? Because I went like 3 years with drinking, almost a year clean, then like 3 years of drinking, nothing else. And so I started really enjoying the Coke high, which makes sense because my true drug of choice is meth. And so I thought to myself, if I can't afford Coke, I know what I can afford. Mm. I could afford some meth, right? I could buy a 20 or whatever, get high on that, and I'll be good for a couple of days.
Sure.
And so that's where it kind of led to everything. Like, I fell right back into it. Smoking led back into shooting. I was showing up at work. I was high. I was getting high in the bathrooms. I'm not proud of this. I mean, everybody knows my story, especially like my old coworkers and the people. Hi, Adam, I'm sorry. Derek, I'm sorry. But
step
I was
nine.
Selling dope.
Step
I was
nine, selling Hard Knocks Talks.
I was selling dope to my employees. Like some of them, like not everybody, but I was selling some, you know, and it got a little off the hook. Like, you know, it was like we had to hire security in the office, like out in the hall, because there was like random fights sometime that broke out. People were stealing stuff. It was just kind of off the hook.
Hang on now. This was happening at your work.
At work.
Because you were selling these people drugs and they were going off the hinge at work.
I don't necessarily think it's because I was selling drugs. It was kind of the whole culture started changing anyways.
Okay.
Right? The culture starts changing. You get one bad apple, things start falling apart. But that was my involvement in that. Yeah. If that makes sense. I'm sure I didn't help it, the situation, you know? But I was shooting dope in the bathroom. I was doing all types of stuff and then coming back in and trying to pretend that I wasn't high, right? Mm-hmm. And trying to work. You know, that only lasted maybe like a month. And I remember I finally got demoted back to opening position, right? And that was hard for me, like to be. It was humbling. I had a, and of course, I was not enough to stop getting high. My thought was, well, you take my salary away, you take my bonuses away. How am I supposed to make money, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to go back to selling dope. So I started selling dope and I'm working back at entry level position. Bob just got hired. Bob makes the same as me. Bob has the same amount of authority, right? Bob's not real, but if he was in the situation and just started, that's how much authority I had.
I'm going to sell Bob some meth and see how things go.
Bob, you got this check coming on Thursday. Check
sabotage.
It out.
Yeah.
Come on,
first
Bob,
one's free, Bob.
I know
first
we
one's free.
Monday.
Yeah.
And so look, so we did, I started selling, right? And it became, I would clock off. I would go out and get high all night and sell downtown Portland because we were in a nice high-rise building in like the Union Bank Tower, downtown Portland, right? And so you got to imagine I'm on the block all day, you know, selling dope, doing this, you know, a different block than where my work was. But it's like, and then like when it came to time to get to work, I'd set a little alarm on my phone or whatever, go off. And I'm like, oh, it's time to go to work. Go to the car, throw a suit on. Head back up to work. You know, it was humbling and it was more embarrassing, I should say, to have to start over at that position. But I still felt like I was entitled, right? Like I may be at the entry level position, but the other managers aren't going to say nothing to me, right? The other managers are like, I've already got my reprimanded, you know? So I would always like, somebody would hit me up, want to buy some dope. I would just, in the middle of work, and I would just go down the elevator, walk a block and a half, go sell dope, come back. I made my money, right? I'm making minimum wage right now at the sales job. I'm going to go make $200 on the corner and then come right back. Well, it's got to be quite obvious when you have somebody in a sober world and supposed to be a sober environment. Probably real easy to spot somebody in a suit that's twice as big. Too big for him, right? Look like you're swimming in a suit, you're geeking and tweaking, your eyes are out of your head, right? So they kind of put the kibosh on it. My manager, or not my manager, the vice president of the company, my guy Adam Ward, he's like a mentor to me, right? You know, he told me, he's like, hey Sky, like, you know, you got to get some help. Like, where I will pay for treatment out of my entire pocket. Like, where do you want to go? Like, I will take care of it. Let's just get you straight. Right. And because he told me, and I turned it down and I looked at him and I said, Adam, do not waste your money. I said, I'll be real with you. Like, I'm just now kind of getting back into my addiction. And I said, right now I'm having a lot of fun.
So, you know, so you knew, you were completely aware that, yep, I'm going down the rabbit hole and we're going to go down with a bang.
Going down with a bang. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And something else that I wanted to touch on, you said like you needed to be the light, you needed to bring all the Coke, you needed to be the life of the party, you needed to make sure everybody was well serviced. Did you know at the time when you were watching your bank account get drained, like, were you concerned at all? Or were you just like, nah, let's fucking go. I'll make more money. Like, what did that look
kinda,
like for you?
Kinda. It was a little scary, but I mean, you're partying. I'm like, well, as long as we got money for more Coke or more drugs, like, what is the issue? Like, I'm still showing up to work Monday. Mm-hmm. So when I was in my addiction, which this whole place took, you know, I was drinking for most of maybe 3 years there, right? Before things got really bad. But like my actual like drug, like hard drugs, whatever, or just drugs in general, right? That only lasted maybe like a 3-month, 2-month stint. So there's so much to unpack here in such a short time, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, I figured like the whole time, like I wasn't the type to get high and miss work. Like I showed up the next day. I'm up, might as well show up, right?
Yeah. And what about the demotion? Like when that happened, what did they tell, like, did they tell you like, look, you're on one? Or what was that like?
Of course. Yes, they did.
Straight up.
Yes, they did. They were straight up with me, you know. HR had to play it from an HR standpoint. But I knew I had a lot of people in the room. It's hard to not feel betrayed because you're getting put down. These are the people that lifted you in this position. There's a lot of guilt. There's a lot of fear because you don't know what's happening. A lot of anxiety and stress all in there. So, you know, but at the end of the day, looking back at it, you know, I do know I was surrounded, especially a select few that actually did love me and care for me. And so I had to really, you know, they straight up told me like, hey, like, we're going to put you back at the entry level position. Like, you should be fired for what you've done. We all agree on that, right? And as I was like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I do agree. And he's like, well, so you should be fired because of it, but we are afraid if we fire you, we're not going to be able to keep tabs on you, and we care for you and we love you. So please show up tomorrow, you know, still wear a suit, dress for the job you want, but you're going to be in the entry level position. You can work your way back up, but we just don't want to fire you because we're afraid you might die or end up in prison.
Wow.
And so they put me back there because they wanted to at least keep tabs on me. They knew I was at least safe from those hours if I was there.
That's incredible.
And so it's a different type of love. Like I said, shout out to Adam, Derek, all them like who made that decision. Like this is the same person, Adam, that offered me the treatment. Like I'll pay for it out of my pocket. And I was like, I don't want to waste your money. Like I'm having fun. You know, I know it's destructive, but I am enjoying my high right now. I'm just getting back into it. This is a high I've been missing for 4 years. Like I'm going to go for a little ride. And sure not, like I finally lost my job. It finally became too much because I took advantage of the opportunity they gave me. And then I was on the streets full time. Right. And what I mean by that is like hustling and selling. Right. And so when you do that, like at least if I had worked that day or in a couple hours or whatever, like I would try to be somewhat coherent. Mm-hmm. But if I have no work or no job or no HR, like it's just balls to the walls. Like we're turning up, you know, I'll pass out when I pass out. And when I wake up, we're going to repeat the cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, I finally found myself landing back in prison that time. So,
yeah. What'd you go in for?
I went in for delivery. So I went in for delivery. So all of my charges, I've probably been arrested about 20 times. All my charges are either delivery or possession. Right. They get you for other stuff like trespassing or things like that. Cause I was homeless for a lot of my earlier addiction. So, you know, they're like, oh, well, you're trespassing. We get to search your pockets, like, you know, type thing. And then I get popped for that. So I have stuff like that. I did get burglary. Can't pronounce the word, but I got it. Breaking and entering. Right.
Burglary
or whatever.
Burglary.
Yeah. That one.
That's the one.
It's one of the very few words I can't pronounce.
We got that in Canada too.
So look, I got that when I was like 18. But that's like, besides that, all my charges are drugs.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, you live and you learn, man, but it's your experiences that bring you here and spit you out the other side a better man. So,
time in any of those proceedings, like, did a judge or prosecutor ever say, like, hey, man, you know, there's help out there. Like, was there any sort of attempt at any sort of intervention or programming? Even when I assume you served some time, was there programming in facilities?
Yeah, there was programming in facilities. A lot of the stuff they do, you know, I will say Multnomah County may not get the best rap for drugs because a lot of people are here and there's a lot of resources here. And so a lot of people like online and people see like the riots or people see the homelessness and people see all the camping outside. So we kind of get a bad rap, but I know there is a lot of opportunity if you want it in Multnomah County, which is Portland, Oregon, right? Mm-hmm. There was always kind of opportunity, but I didn't really want to go do that, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't want to do that. I kind of serve my sentence or I want to run around. One of the times I got lucky and the probation and parole kind of dropped the ball. And one of the judges that I had, my probation judge, said, hey, go to court. Like, he was upset with the probation people. Like, they were dropping the ball. He didn't even know why I was in there. He rescheduled the court date. The next time the papers weren't even filed, rescheduled again. So this was like my third or fourth time in court with like 14 days left for them to arraign me, right? And figure out what I'm even in court for. So finally he told me like, hey, what'd you do? And I was like, hey, this is what I did. And he's like, cool. He's like, you want to do treatment? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, well, I know your probation officer wanted you to serve a sentence for this. But he's like, but if they can't get it together, we're just going to give you treatment if that's what you want. Like, that's on them. They, maybe next time they'll be on their ball, right? Yeah. And so I got treatment. And that's where I actually had some clean time, had almost a year clean, started drinking. So that's what led me to that opportunity and got me off the streets to begin with. So there was programming. I know doing county, I probably did about five years altogether. Right. In prison, I actually did voluntary treatment.
Did you take the voluntary treatment because you wanted to get better or did you take it because you wanted to get out sooner?
No, you know, so the voluntary treatment was something when I was in prison, I took it because I wanted more tools in my belt.
Okay.
So I was still getting out. I was still eligible for trans leave, whether I did it or not.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which was 3 months off my sentence. I was still eligible for that because I didn't get into any trouble. No write-ups besides smoking cigarettes in the bathroom. Right. That was the only write-ups I got. But besides that, it wasn't enough to take away my good time. So that was locked in. The reason why I wanted to go ahead and do it is because I got clean and sober for music. Right. And so if anybody ever sees my logo, what it stands for, it's a microphone with wings. And what it stands for is music saved my life. And that's why it's my guardian angel. Right. And so I had this thought to myself, what is my best opportunity? What am I doing? What are my dreams? My dreams is to make it in music. And I realized that I have never done music sober in my entire life, even starting at 11 years old. Yeah. Never performed sober, never made music sober. I was always under the influence. So I told myself, what's my best shot at living these dreams that I had as a little kid? And that was to get sober. That was something different. I didn't get sober for recovery. I thought it was corny. It was always forced on me by probation and parole. I didn't want to be those guys. I don't want to do meetings. I don't want to do like, that seems like a hassle. It seems like a chore and it seemed like a punishment, right?
Yeah.
But I told myself, what is your best chance at doing this music thing? And it's to do it sober. And so that's where my logo comes from, because I got clean and sober for music to live my dreams and to give me my best advantage. Nowadays, I stay clean and sober because of the life that recovery has provided. I refuse to give up. And so that's how I led to it, right? So it opened my eyes to recovery. And now I'm full-fledged. I'm in it. Like, I won't budget for nothing. I worked for my life, but it's incredible and I love it.
Let's take a quick break and read off some sponsors and some PSAs. We'll be right back. Fetal All Health. We're going to try that again. Okay. Last show, let's go. Yeah. Fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, known as FASD, is a developmental disorder that can impact anyone. It affects the daily lives of over 4% of Canadians, but with support and services, individuals with FASD can thrive. Learn more at saskfasdnetwork.ca. If you're interested in checking out another Canadian mental health podcaster, there's also a link for that in the show notes. Check him out. To make contact or learn more about today's sponsors, check out our new merch, or if you want to show us some love and buy us a coffee, all of those links are also in the show notes below. There's also a link for Skylar in the show notes below. Flexin.
Hey, my man.
So when you got sober, you got sober too, so that you could pursue music. Were you worried that if you got sober that you would lose your skills?
You know, honestly, not. I just never even thought about it. I never gave it that thought. All I knew is that I would be able to pursue it correctly. I knew I would stay out of trouble if I was sober. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought I might have a little bit more brain motor function, I guess you should say.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, I might be able to do this, you know, because I made music the entire time while I was smoking weed, drinking, everything like that. But when I was on meth, like, I didn't record as much. And for most of my hard drug addiction, like, I didn't make music. So there's like 6-7 year gap where, you know, either I'm in prison or doing this, maybe like 4 or 5, maybe 6. I don't know. But there's multiple years where I'm not doing my music. And it's like, that's really lame, right?
You know, if I may, like, how can you? Because I mean, you know, 10 minutes into something and you flailed out and you're off doing something else and then maybe come back to it and you forgot what you started.
Figuring how to charge your cell phone on your soundboard or something.
Take apart the garbage can and figure out how it works. Yeah. You know, like, shit. There's not much productive things happening when you're on that stuff. Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, and most of the time, go ahead.
So the reason I asked that, though, is because I've had several artists on, and even recently, even in the past couple of months, I've had more than one artist on, and they both said the same thing, that they one of their reservations for getting sober was they didn't think they'd be able to perform sober. So that's why I ask.
You know, I've never thought about that, but here's the thing, that it makes sense people think about that, because, you know, when I went to perform after being sober and getting out of prison, I didn't even think about it, but I was so scared and realized I have stage fright, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't, because I've never performed sober, and I was like, oh my God, I'm so nervous. Like, I'm scared. Like, I can't even remember a line from my song. So that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they thought it all the way out. Maybe I just had a wild hair and was like, let's go. Yeah. But
it's like knees weak.
I was.
Arms are heavy.
Yeah, knees weak, arms are heavy.
Vomit on your sweater already. Mom spaghetti.
Yeah, yeah. But it was scary, and I still get stage fright. I really do. I learned a little bit more to have the confidence and to know that I put the preparation on behind closed doors, so my hard work will come to the light, right? Mm-hmm. I have to remember that even if I can't remember one line, as soon as that song hits, it's going to be go time, and it just happens, right? Your brain does it. Like, your body does it, what you've been trained to do. Mm-hmm. And so it's instincts, right? But like those first few tours, like, or even just like solo shows, like being sober, I felt so sick. It felt like someone was squeezing like my intestines, my stomach. It just felt like my whole thing was just it sucked. And I was so scared. I was so nervous. And then I performed. I didn't back out. I did it. And it was such a high and an adrenaline rush. Yeah. Right. So it's kind of like you get scared. Even nowadays, I get scared. But after like a song or two in, I'm like, oh, let's go. What's next? You know?
Yeah.
It's definitely fun. It's a new high for sure.
And I can relate. And Donna can relate. I'm certain. Because like Donna and I, we end up on stages too, right? Like, it's different. We're public speakers. We do keynotes and different things like that. But it's that sweaty palms. And once you get up there, though, and you realize that your words have value and people need to hear them and they're coming out and you're not missing anything. It's like you walk off that stage and, oh, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something else.
It's an adrenaline. It really is. And the crazy thing is, like, us as, you know, performers or like you guys speakers, and if anybody's listening and is like scared to chase your dreams or scared to do something, right? And like when you have to do it, you're gonna think if you mess up, right, it seems magnified. It feels like that second or two or even split second, right, it seems like it takes minutes because you're looking at people, you're seeing their thoughts. He's frowning at me, he thinks I suck, like he's laughing.
Somebody
back there, they're definitely
like
laughing at me. But I've looked back at footage and I was like, oh, this is where I mess up. This is where I mess up. And I was like, what? Wind it back. Hold on. I can't even tell where I messed up. Anybody's watching this, most of the world won't even notice when you mess up. You just got to keep going. And if you love something, absolutely just do it. Mm-hmm. Chase those dreams. So
agreed.
It's worth it.
Yeah. And you know, I had a keynote speaker, my friend Al Kaler, pretty well known in my community here. And he said one of his mentors once told him is like, Alan, if you ever stop being scared to get on that stage, it's time to stop going up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're scared because you care.
Yeah. Mm.
Yep.
You know, because it means a lot to you. Like, I'm scared because this is my dreams and this is all I've ever wanted. So like, if I'm not good enough or if I can't cut it, like, that's what's scary. And at the end of the day, you know, going back to that conversation I had to myself in prison, the reason why I got sober is because we all have friends, right, that say, oh, I could have played ball, but like my knee was killing me. Oh, I could have done this. And you're thinking, well, why didn't you if you can do it? And there's people like, oh, I'm better than that guy. It's like, okay, you know. So I wanted to absolutely let my story unfold, and I owed it to the little 9-year-old boy that had those dreams to be a music artist, right? And so I owed it to him to let the story unfold. I'm okay if I'm not good enough. If I don't make it in music because I'm not good enough, if I don't have what it takes, it's gonna suck. But at the end of the day, I can go to bed with that because that's closure. A lot of people are not good enough for a lot of things. That's just the reality of it, right? But here's the thing. What if I didn't give it my all and I got old and I thought, man, I really could have done that. I don't think I could really, that I think it would kill me, that guilt. You really had those dreams your all entire life and you didn't give it your all? That's not the story I want to live with. Not being good enough, I could deal with that. Yeah. Like I said, so that's really what it came down to. I was like, yo, I got to get sober. Because when I thought about that, I was like, well, what's my best opportunity at making my dreams come true? What's something I've never done before? And I was like, I've never done it sober. Let's give this a try.
That's and amazing, so, like, that you had that sort of realization, you know, on your own accord. Like, you know, for some people, it takes some coaching or some whatever, right? But for you to come to that conclusion by yourself and then start to lay the foundation for that path, like, that's really remarkable. Good for you, man.
Thank you so much. I mean, it's like my dreams have always been the same, right? It's like I've wanted music since I was 9 years old, been doing music since 11. It's like I know playing the tape forward. I know how it always ends. Like, I've been locked up about 20 times. So the same conversation that I always tell myself, and if you're an addict, you've ever been locked up or any type of situation, maybe you've been in rehab, you know this. You say, when I get out, I'm going to do different.
Things
when I get out, I'm going to get that job. Right?
Yeah,
and you're probably telling the truth, honest to God, believe it. But as soon as you hit those streets, things are different, right? You know, different from what you just told yourself they were going to be. And so I was sitting there having that conversation with myself, and I thought, and I was like, man, and it's crazy because I was telling myself, and I was like, wait a second, and I had to check myself. You say this every single time, and the same results happen every single time. Bless you, baby. Every single time it happens, it is like, well, if you're serious about it, it's time to actually, like, apply what you know, apply what you learn, stop talking, and handle it, right? Apply that action, right? I was getting out at 28 years old from prison. Like, you know, if you really love it, it's either kind of, I guess, excuse my language, net up or shut up, right?
Yeah.
It's like, handle it. And that's what it is. So, I mean, I got tired of lying to myself. I got tired of telling myself I love music, but then choosing drugs over it. I got tired of telling myself that I want to do music for a living, but then not doing that, right? And I didn't want to lie to myself any longer. And I figured out, if this is what I want to do, you really need to apply yourself. You're not dumb. You're smart. You know, if you love it and you have the passion for it, everybody owes it to themselves to go out there and chase their dreams and live those dreams. And
burn
so this
the fucking
is,
boats.
This is my dreams. Burn them.
Everyone, even the canoe under the bushes over there.
So
once you made up your mind on that front, like, how quickly did you start getting bookings and different things? And like, and I guess, so where I'm kind of going with this is, you know, there's that window of uncertainty, right? Like, you're like, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm like committed, but maybe things aren't lining up quite the way that you, you know, had hoped or whatever sort of terminology you want to use. How did you cope in those times? Like, what got you through? You know, when you start to have those self-doubts and like, oh, maybe this isn't going to work out. Those kinds of,
maybe,
you know,
I should
the
go
negative
back to sales.
Hey, well, that's the thing. So look, I got out, right? And I had this whole entire revelation, and like, I stayed clean and sober the whole time in prison. Like, because of my, I had drug charges, I wasn't a violent offender. I got stuck in minimum. I had gate clearance, so I was out cleaning up the highways. You know, everybody's sneaking stuff back. Everybody's drinking when you're at the homeless camps, finding bottles. Like, you know, people are doing all to whatever they find, right? And then, of course, you're in prison, so there's drugs. I stayed clean and sober the entire time. I smoked my cigarettes when I was in there. But when I got out, right? So my clean date is actually after I got out. For the simple fact is, you know, I had a reservation. And if anybody who knows anything about that, it's where you tell yourself, when I, you know, if this situation happens, this is kind of how it's going to go down, right? And so, you know, I told myself when I get out, you know, I would write a passage as a man. I felt like as a man getting out of prison, going to prison, right? You know, when I get out, I'm going to have me a nice cigar and I'm going to have me a nice drink. I already know what drink I want. You know, I had one picked out, you know, and so I kind of sat on it for a few days and I got out. And when I went from county to prison, I wrote like 3 albums in there, a bunch of music. And the guards wouldn't let me take it with me. So I gave it to somebody in there. And so, you know, after being out of prison for like 6-7 days or whatever, that guy hit me and was like, hey, I got your notebook. And I was like, yo, that's crazy. I thought it was lost. And he's like, I was like, where can we meet? And he's like, oh, come meet me. I'm at this bar. And I thought, well, here we go, right? And so I told myself I was going to have just one. I had just one. Right. So I told him myself, OK, I'm going to have just one. But here's where it really caught me is when, mind you, I had no housing when I got out. OK. And so I was living in free housing. And the one rule is you had to be clean and sober to live there. Right. You have to pass UAs. You have to do this. You have your own little studio apartment, shared bathrooms, but like a little closet. Like, no, my studio is probably as big as the room I was in. Right. But I went out and had this drink and, you know, I'm downtown Portland in my stomping grounds and it kind of, you know, I wasn't hanging out with the best of people, right? People, places and things.
Yeah.
And I was hanging out with my friends and they were selling dope and I was riding in the car with them. They were out there hustling and things like that. And so I kind of had to think about my actions. And then I remember when I had that drink and I was riding home and I was on public transportation. And I was listening to good music and I was thinking to myself, you know, when you have that drink and your lips start, you know, getting a little bit buzzy and start getting a little numb. I was riding back and I was like, okay, so here's the game plan. When I get back to this apartment downtown, what I'm going to do is, because I got the keys. So if the guy's working at the front desk, I'm going to pretend I'm smoking a cigarette. Then when he turns around, I'm going to sneak up. And I caught myself and I thought about it and I was like, wait a second, sneak up. And I went back to that whole conversation I just told you guys about in prison. And I said, wait a second, if sneaking up, that means I'm doing something I'm not supposed to be doing. And I said, I better check myself because I know how slippery of a slope it is. You can't drink. You can't do this. It always leads to the same thing. And so that was on December 5th, 2018. So I laid in bed that night, scared, you know, what my future might result in. And the very next day is my clean date. December 6, 2018, a little over 5 years ago, you know, I decided that there's no nothing. There's no reservation. I can't just have a drink. I can't do that. And decided to really take it seriously.
Where was mom and dad through all of this?
Mom and dad, my mom split up, split up, right? I was in foster care for some of it. I think my mom was down in Southern Oregon. My dad was up in Portland, but my dad, bless his heart.
Were they in your life?
Yeah, they were in my life, but bless their heart. But it wasn't really, no one was really set up to really take any action or responsibility.
No one knew what to do.
You know, kind of on my own, and which is okay. You know, it definitely made me stronger. So, and if anybody's listening, I talked to my mom and dad. I was just at a concert with my dad last night. I talked to my mom this morning. Absolutely love them. You know, we all do the best we can in this world, but I cherish them and I'm grateful for what they've done for me. So,
I got a comment. Let's see what we got here.
I'm not surprised to see that you put that one up.
Yeah.
From our good friend Onyx, she says, some of my best lies are the ones I told myself, but the best truth is that I am not my story. I'm lived experience created by divine.
That's beautiful.
Thanks. I love Onyx's comments. They're just always so amazing.
Yes, and there's no typos tonight. That's amazing.
Hey, let's go, Onyx.
We love you, Onyx.
And then answer your question. What I do in situations is I just remember what I have going for me. I remember what the I keep my eye on the prize, understand my focus. I'm kind of a hermit, right? I only pop out during shows or tours or if I need to run the post office or get some food. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, you know, I deal with a lot of situations in my safe zone, which is my house. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I catch myself sometimes getting angry, things like that. You know, but at the same time, I'm careful with my recovery, right? I cherish it enough that, you know, I'm very choosy with my energy and where I spend time at and things like that, right? Mm-hmm. I don't go out and hang out. When I do pop out and it shows, I do come in with the expectations that, yes, you know, unless I'm on my road to recovery tour, there is going to be drugs. There is going to be drink. It's going to be everywhere, right? But, I, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I have my best friend, my other half, my partner in crime, Kayla Mulcahy. You know, I got my new addition, my dog. Like, life is everything I've always dreamed of, you know. Of course, I have a long way to go to reach the peak of those dreams, but I am living the journey right now of what it takes to get there and to do what I absolutely love for a living. You know, I have to be cautious of my recovery. I have to be careful. I have to be, you know, I have to respect what drugs are and respect what drugs can do to me. And understand that I am an addict, right? I don't take that lightly. Just because I've changed my ways, it does not mean I'm fixed. Mm. Just because, you know, I live a different way doesn't mean that I can't fall right back, you know? So I always try to keep that in the back of my mind. You know, I don't do meetings. I don't do the big book. I highly recommend it if anybody's listening. I know it works, but for me, that's not my recovery. You know, I go on tour, these road to recovery tours. I stop into treatment centers. I talk with people. I get a chance to hear their story. I share my story. And it's really cool. And it gives me strength and hope, you know, to be able to hear what people are like, because maybe I'm talking to somebody who's only been in recovery for a week. And I was like, and they'll tell me their story. And I'm like, damn, that's what it was like. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. I forgot that pain I felt or how hard, like. That's crazy. I was scared like that before. I've been through that. And it really keeps it alive.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's important to be able to handle things like that. So at the end of the day, I just respect drugs for what they are. I respect that and acknowledge that I'm an addict and I'm just cautious.
Yeah.
That's the best way to handle it, you know?
Mm-hmm. So you, a man of faith, spiritual beliefs, what guides you?
I do believe in God. You know, just like recovery, I don't go to church, you know, but I know my relationship with him is, you know, in the Bible, it says that your relationship is, he understands you, right? Mm-hmm. And that as long as you know you're good with him, he's good with you. And so that's always kind of been my thing is, you know, I know he's looking out for me. I know he's going to be there for me. And all I can do is continue to walk my best foot forward. And so that's what I do. Absolutely. I believe in God. I know he's there. Like, that's just what it is. Like I said, I don't do the church thing, but it's okay because I have belief and he understands who I am and he made me who I am. So he accepts me believing in him the way I do.
Awesome.
So
right on, man. I think we're going to cap it there.
Okay.
What do you think? Anything left?
No, I feel like it was a fantastic conversation. Like, really, really great, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. Where can people find you? Tell us about your music. Where can we find it?
Okay, you can find me anywhere, Skylar Ray. That Skylar is with an E, not an A. So it'd be Skyler, Ray. So Skylar Ray. All platforms, look me up under there. I will come up, Google it, whatever. It will pop up there. If you're looking for merchandise, officialskylarray.com. Also, I wouldn't be who I am if I didn't plug my best friend. Check out Kayla Mulcahy. That is my other half. She's the reason why I go as hard as I do, right? So absolutely check her out. She's amazing. And it's spelled K-A-L-A. That's Kayla. And then Mulcahy, he's a mouthful. So check it out. So M-U-L-A-H-A-H-Y.
You got to figure that out.
Figure it out. But you look me up. It will lead to her. That's how you find me. I appreciate you guys so much for inviting me on the podcast. It's been a blessing.
All right. Cool, man. Thanks so much, Skylar, for joining us. And we will let you go. Take care.
Take care.
Thank you, my friend.
Yeah.
Hey.
So that's it. I just want to say thank you to everybody, all of the organizations that have supported us along the way. This is our last show. This is our last show in this studio. This is the studio where it all got started, where I started with my laptop 3.5 years ago, living on student loan, not having any money, rusty Pontiac in the driveway, full-time dad, then 50% dad, and all of the things. I'd like to thank Prairie Sky Recovery Center for being the very first organization to step up and believe in me, believe in what I do. I want to thank Mom Stop the Harm, Prairie Harm Reduction. I want to thank the Elizabeth Fry Society. I want to thank, Saskatchewan Union of Nurses.
FASD Network.
The FASD Network, Network of Saskatchewan Possibilities Recovery Center. Yeah. Who else?
Oh, God. The CRISM,
the School Canadian
of Public Health.
I gotta say them. The Canadian Research Initiative in Substance Misuse, the School of Public Health, Barb, my friend, the College of Medicine, the College of Nursing, the College of Pharmacy and Nutrition. Thank you, everyone, and thank you especially to the community that has come up around us, for everyone who watches, everyone who comments and leaves their thoughts on our content. Thank you all. We are not gone. We are gone for but a minute. We are going to come back stronger and louder in a new space, in a new home, on the next stage of our life, and we're looking forward to having you along with us right here on Hard Knocks Talks. We will see you soon.
Here.
Say, this is Hard Knocks Talks.